As I mentioned, that the Mechaber, the author of the Sefer Chovis Halvodis, Rabbeinu Bechaya, Evan Pekuda, was a generation before the Rambam. In other words, Rambam basically was Nifter in the early 1200s, and the Chovis Halvodis lived in the 11th century. Scholars, in order to be able to provide that information, because there's no official record regarding the exact time that Rabbeinu Bechaya, in other words, the Chovis Halvodis, lived, but they're able to deduce it from the following way. For example, he refers to the great people that preceded him when he quotes Rabbeinu Sadia Gaon. He writes, Achrona Levrocha, so you know that they were before him. Other Gdolim, great people that he quotes, he writes, Zechrona Levrocha. Then when he mentions someone, as we'll soon see, without Zechrona Levrocha, it is suggested because it was in the same generation that he lived in. So this was a little bit of a clue. For example, we see that he brings down all kinds of Sifrei Halacha, he brings down Shailos Teshuvos, and he does not bring down, for example, one of the Gedoyla Halacha. If you're writing Shailos Teshuvos and you're basically bringing down Halacha, one would assume that he would bring one of the greats of all time, also before the Rambam, and that was the Rif, Rabbeinu Yitzchak Alfasi. He does not bring him. It is suggested, therefore, that in fact that he was before him, lived before him. Just to give you an idea, Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi was Nifter in Spain in 1103, as early as that. And he does not bring Bechalal when he mentions Inyonim of Halacha, and the drawing on sources of those that preceded him, or in his time, he does not mention at all, does not mention anything about Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi, and that is not because of an oversight. It's simply because he was before him and did not exist in his time. Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi was not around at his time. Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi basically was really born in Algeria, in Fez. That, by the way, is the reason for his name, Alfasi. Alfasi means coming from Fez, from Algeria. And, of course, he was a great Rosh Yeshiva over there. And at age 75, interesting thing that he was slandered. He was slandered to the government on some unknown charge and was forced to flee to Spain. So at age 75, he makes his way to Spain, and instead of retiring, he starts fresh and becomes a Rosh Yeshiva, the head of the academy over there. He spent some time in Cordova in Spain, where he was cordially received. There he goes to Lucena, and basically he continues on for something to close to 100 years old. So he was Maruch Yomim, he says, the Rif, and so on. Just interesting that to point out, regarding the greatness of the Rif, that the Rambam considered the Rif, Rabbeinu Yitzchak Alfasi, to be so great, that he brings everywhere the Piske Halacha. The Halachas of the Rambam is based on the Rif, and in all of the thousands of Halachas, you go through the Rambam, literally thousands of Halachas, he only basically disagrees with the Rif approximately only 30 times. Which basically means that he follows the Rambam. One can clearly say that the Rambam follows the Rif, which, by the way, which has great bearing in a more serious way. Why? Because, in fact, we find that you consider that Rabbi Yosef Karo, the Shulchan Aruch, who wrote the Shulchan Aruch, which is based primarily upon the Rambam's code. So now, the Rambam himself, as we just see, that basically follows the Rif. So you can imagine that that was a cause for the Shulchan Aruch, basically in very, very many instances, that the Halacha was established by the Shulchan Aruch, according to the Shita of the Rif. Because the Rambam's tradition came from the Rif, as we saw, in most of these cases. Just Kedai Taket to mention, just regarding the Rif, that the Meiri writes in one of the places about saying that the Rif was the greatest, he says, of all the halachic authorities. And the matter of fact, the Rambam writes of him that he superseded all his predecessors in his great work of compiling from all over Shas. What the Rif did is he left out the pilpul, left out the discussions, and brought down sort of like the conclusions of all the halachis, and he paskin basically, because whenever there's difference of opinion, you have to know, so which opinion you follow. So the Rif basically brought down the code of law from all over Shas and established the halacha. The interesting thing is, you know, the Ravid, who spares no words when he disagrees with the Rambam, very ferociously, the Lashonis, the Lashon, the words and the language that the Ravid use when he disagrees with the Rambam, sometimes you stop and did he really write that? Did he really say that? And that's the Ravid. The Ravid does not mince any words. And yet, the Ravid, who is, as we say, very, very critical in his evaluation of many, many authors, he states regarding the Rif, and he says, I quote the Lashon. The Ravid says, I would adhere to the words of the rabbi, he says, even if you were to decide that right was left. Ad kedekach, to this extent, says the Ravid, to show again the great respect, of course, of the Rif. And just interesting to see, probably the greatest of, or one of all the Balei Tosfos, you know, when you learn Tosfos, you have Rabbeinu Tam, you have the Ri. The Ri writes that it's impossible, he says, for a mortal, he says, to compose such a work unless he says that the Shekhinah, the Divine Presence, rested upon him. Anyway, so what are we saying this? So we're saying, so Rabbeinu Bachya, he says, the Chovos Avodos does not bechlal, does not at all bring the Rif. And being that he does not at all bring the Rif, that leads us to believe that in fact that he was a generation, matter of fact, he was a generation before the Rif. Another thing, who he doesn't bring? One of the great philosophers of all time, and one of the great Paitonim, who wrote so much poetry in so many different hymns and in the Tfilis and the Kinois and so on and so forth, was Reb Shloime, right? Reb Shloime Evin Gvirol. In Tel Aviv, there's a street called Evin Gvirol, which is named after Reb Shloime Evin Gvirol. Reb Shloime Evin Gvirol, again, was born in Spain in 1021, and he was Nifter in Spain. Like you see, very, very short life. Is in 1058, born 1027, and he was Nifter, passed away in 1058. Just to point out, Rav Shloime Evin Gvirol, a Paitan, a philosopher, and so on and so forth, we say a Baal Musar. How would you say a Baal Musar in English? Ethicist, maybe. Someone who's basic in ethics. So, Akoponim, Rav Shloime Gvirol, there was... Not everybody knows, you know, we talk about the Evin Ezra, there's the Bavrom Evin Ezra, and then there is Reb Moshe Evin Ezra. Reb Moshe Evin Ezra was before him, was before Bavrom Evin Ezra. Reb Moshe Evin Ezra said of Reb Shloime, Gvirol, he says, but evaluating, he says, the greatness of Reb Shloime, he says, by subduing, he says, Reb Shloime was a person who is able to live in this world and to be able to subdue his natural instincts and inclinations in order to purify his body and the neshama. As a result, he achieved sublime kedusha and ascended to heights unparalleled by his contemporaries. So writes Reb Moshe Evin Ezra. To give you an idea, Reb Moshe Evin Ezra lived in Provence. Matter of fact, that's where he was nifter in 1190. Reb Moshe Evin Ezra. Right, in the year 1190, and it was the himself who composed the many, many grammatical works, Reb Moshe Evin Ezra, and it's just interesting to point out that he was known also in many, many areas, Perushim, and so on and so forth, and his opinion of Reb Shloime Evin Gvirol is something which, of course, speaks a lot of volumes. It's just interesting to point out that Reb Shloime Gvirol was known as a genius right from his childhood. Was known as a genius, but, however, being that he had uncompromising views. He had uncompromising views and criticism of contemporaries, did not meet his standards, so it brought him great anguish. And as a result, it seemed that wherever he went, he did not have an easy life at all. Reb Shloime Evin Gvirol. Rabbeinu Bechaya does not bring him. The Chovos Avodos, meaning, does not bring him. So again, it suggested that he was before them, he was a generation before that. Interesting to point out that about 150 years ago, a little more, 150 years ago, a letter was discovered by Rabbi Yehuda Evin Tibon. Rabbi Yehuda Evin Tibon, of course, as we mentioned in the beginning when we started out, that he was really the Mitargim. He was the one who did the translation. And when we're learning here, Chovos Avodos, as we learn every week, this is the translation. Because remember, it was written in Arabic. Chovos Avodos wrote his sefer in Arabic, which was the language that was spoken. He wanted to reach the masses, but it was translated by others as well. But the one that was accepted was for the translation by Rabbi Yehuda Evin Tibon, also born in Spain, in Grenada, and then went up to France in Lunel. And Rabbi Yehuda Evin Tibon is nifter in 1190. Just interesting to point out that he was a physician. as we find many of the great Rishonim at the time, the Rambam, the Ramban, and so on and so forth. We even said that the Ran, we spoke about in the Shalom Vorchentish, the Ran Rabbeinu Nissim, was also a physician in addition, of course, to being the great Ran that he was. And he was a physician, and he fled Grenada, Spain, and he settles in Lunel. It turns out that he was very accepted as a physician, which many of his patients were people of high nobility. We consider him to be the great doctor, as the Rambam was, you know, for the Sultan. He was the physician of the Sultan and so on. And what happened was that he was encouraged by great people that he should undertake to translate the Chovos HaLevavos from Arabic into Hebrew. That launched, by the way, his career as a translator, because it didn't stop there. What launched his career as a translator, Rebbe Eben Tibon, was translating the Chovos HaLevavos, which, by the way, started out as many, many Arabic works, actually. It turns out that he also translated, we spoke a moment ago, from Reb Shlomo Eben Gvirol. He translated also, because he wrote in Arabic, Reb Shlomo Eben Gvirol, and translated again by Reb Yehuda Eben Tibon, some of the svarim called Mivchar HaPninim, Tikkun Midas VaHanefesh, the Kuzari, by the way. Kuzari also wasn't written in Hebrew, it was written in Lashon Kodesh, Reb Yehuda Halevi, but it was translated by Reb Yehuda Eben Tibon and so on. And again, as pointed out, introduction to the Chovos HaLevavos, Reb Yehuda Eben Tibon writes that he translated it literally rather than rendering a free translation. He tried to translate it literally in order to accurately preserve the author's ideas. Many times a loose translation, sometimes your own feelings, right, your own feelings and experiences and so on gets into the text. And therefore he wanted to make sure that he really portrays accurately the ideas of the Chovos HaLevavos. So he says he translated literally. And matter of fact, scholars who are both proficient in Lashon Kodesh, in Hebrew, and in Arabic, who of course have seen the translation, so they claim that the accurate translation of Reb Yehuda Eben Tibon was above all others, and he became known as the father of translators. The father of translators. As a matter of fact, he had to make up some new words. Interesting, like you have today in modern Hebrew, you know, because of all these technology, you have to have these words for them. So he already then, before the year 1190, he already made up some new words, some new Hebrew words, so to speak, in order to be able to convey certain ideas in a clear and a concise manner. So, interesting things. So I'm mentioning about a little over 150 years ago, it was discovered a letter from Reb Yehuda Eben Tibon that he's writing to whom? He's writing to a great one of the Balei HaTosfos by the name of Rabbeinu Osher Ben Meshulam Milunil, of course in France. Just to tell you, just an aside, Rav Osher Milunil is mentioned in Masechtes Bava Kamma in Tosfos on Daf Samach Dalet. Omer Aleph, there's a Tosfos, and there's mentioned Tosfos in Zehikshah, there's three kashas. Perik Merubim Bovikama, there's three kashas there from Rabbeinu Osher Milunel. So it's brought down in Tosfos very clearly, anybody can see it. So a letter was discovered, as I mentioned, written by Reb Yehuda Eben Tibon, the translator of the Chovos HaLevavos, to Reb Osher, right, Ben Meshulam Milunel, and he writes them the following. He writes, Ki Zoicher, he says, I remember Kashaniva Ato Loim de Masharahu. He makes reference that he, Reb Yehuda Eben Tibon, plus the Balei HaTosfos, one of the Balei HaTosfos, Rabbeinu Osher, that they were learning together Chovos HaLevavos, which was certainly not that far. Yes, Chovos HaLevavos was before them, but it was not so long before. It wasn't all that long. And he mentioned that we were learning together, happened to learn Shar HaYichud, which is the Shar of Unity, which is about the Achdus of Hashem, the unity of HaKadosh Baruch Hu being the only one, and with all of these situations, you know, the very intense the philosophical ideas about the Creator, and so on and so forth, which are deep things, which people there, Klal, don't get too much involved with that today. But anyway, but it's there. And he writes that we studied it. Reb Yehuda Eben Tibon says to Rabbeinu Osher, we studied it. And he mentions that, U'metoich Devarenu, and why we were learning, he said, I said to you, this is what he calls him. I, Reb Yehuda Eben Tibon, I found the Chocham, the philosopher, who? Reb Shlomo Ben Gvirol. He calls him the philosopher. Reb Yehuda Eben Tibon called him the philosopher. I found there's a Chibur Kotan called Tikkun Midos HaNefesh, which is, that's what he called him, an ethicist, we said. He's a Baal Musar, a sefer that talks about refining one's neshama. What about that sefer? That sefer that Reb Shlomo Ben Gvirol wrote is Koilul Kolin Yona Hatisha Sha'orim Misefrahu. It's basically a concise summary of all nine Shur of the Chovos HaLevavos. In other words, what he did, a great person like Reb Shlomo Ben Gvirol took and basically made a summary on nine of the shiurim of the Chovos Avodos, except he added a little bit. He says, Vayit Moisef Aleim, he also added there, and so forth. So the interesting is, he made, so to speak, a kitzur Chovos Avodos. So I'll upon him, so this gives us a little bit of a perspective, you know, regarding the Chovos Avodos, to place him, you know, where he was, of course, in the period of history of those great people. There's more to talk about. It was in the 11th. It was in the 1000s. In 1000s, 11th century. He was the Chovos Avodos. Yeah. And Rabbi Ibn Tibbon was Matargimit, as we said. Yeah, much 100 years later. Later. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So this gives us a little bit of an idea. Let's take a little bit of the sheet. This happens to be also be Shabbishira. Today was Tuesday, Shabbishira. There is a Kabbalah from Rabbi Mendel and Rimanover, you know, to read the Parshas Hamon, which is Parshas Bishalach, which is the biggest gula for Parnosa, well-known thing. So here's another aspect, totally different other aspect, regarding the Shaykhs of Parnosa and to Parshas Bishalach. Let's take a look over here. The first item that we bring here is from the Sefer Ner Yisroel, which is a Sefer which compiles the Divrei Torah. The Biyana Chassidim put it out, I actually reprinted it again. The Sefer has been printed many, many times from the original Rebbe. The Biyana Chassidim are descendants of Rabbi Shtrutzi originer, of course. And so the Sefer Ner Yisroel brings the following. The Gemara tells us in Masechta Pesachim Daf Kuf Yud Ches. The Gemara says that Koshim is a noisav shalodom ki kriyas yamsuf. Well-known Gemara. What describes the difficulty of parnosa, difficulty of a livelihood, earning a livelihood. It's not an easy thing. And Koshim is a noisav shalodom. As a matter of fact, the Gemara describes it, makes a dimian, it's as difficult as kriyas yamsuf, as splitting the sea. The Gemara says, of all the various different, right, the very different that you want to compare it to, possibly you could compare difficulty, all kinds of difficulties. The Gemara decided to compare it as difficult as splitting the sea, Kriyas Yamsuf. So, the question is, what does it mean? What does it mean? First of all, Kriyas Yamsuf, for whom was it difficult? Who made Kriyas Yamsuf? Kriyas Baruch Hu made Kriyas Yamsuf. Kriyas Baruch Hu was difficult, Kriyas Yamsuf? Kriyas Baruch Hu was able to do it instantaneously. He just had to decide he wants to do it. He decided he wants to do it, he did it! So what does it mean the panos of a person is as difficult as Kriyas Yamsuf? What does it mean? So the Sefer Ner Yisrael, the original Rebbe, brings and says the following. He says, Karpirshu ha-Meforshim, brings down b'shem Meforshim. He says, Meforshim explains, she'ein kavanosom, the Gemara does not mean b'zeh keneged ha-mashpia. It's not talking about the difficulty, but the one, right, of the one who is mashpia. In other words, the one who is benevolent, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mashpia, the one who is bringing, giving the pranosa. For him it's not difficult to give the pranosa. For him it's not difficult to be mashpia pranosa. Of course, it's not talking about the mashpia. He said, Veloimar, as if to say, Shekoshe lefonov yizborech, that it's difficult for him, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, lashpia aloyodom, to be able to shower people, mezoinoisov, his sustenance, hatzorech loy. That of course does not mean at all. Mar's intention is not to say that the pranosa of a person, that is difficult for a Kodesh Baruch Hu to give pranosa to a person as difficult as it was for him to do Kriyas Yamsuf. Not that is difficult and not that is difficult for Kodesh Baruch Hu. He says, it's not possible any difficulty for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, has the sole power. He has the sole power and ruling exclusively. Whether in the upper worlds and the lower world. He's the one who is the almighty, the all-powerful. So what does it mean? The pranos of a person is so difficult as Kriyas Yamsuf. We're talking about the receiver, we're talking about the person, namely Verot Zolimer. What it means is as follows. When a person does not really have panosa, for him, the difficulty of not having panosa going difficult, at that moment, it is no difficult for him. His tzaras, a person's private tzaras for him, is just as difficult as somebody else's tzaras in another area, no matter what it is. For him, this is the tzara. So in Klal Yisrael, you can imagine the tzara standing before Kriyas Yamsuf and waiting for Kriyas Yamsuf, a person who is waiting for Parnosa for him. That wait is just as difficult as Yidin standing by Kriyas Yamsuf waiting for the Yeshua in their area. which means to say, koshaloi oisesho, for that person who needs the panusa, for him it's difficult that moment, kamoi oisesho, as the time was, shohoi koshaloi so, be'esh omdu lifne kriyas yam, so when they were standing before the splitting of the sea, vohi nitzrochel nishu gedoyle, and they needed a great Yeshua, lehi notzel meroyes aveim, to be able to be saved, right, from the evil, right, of the enemy. The Mitzrayim, the Egyptians ran after them, pursued them to kill them, with all the power and with force. So what we're saying is, Koshim is a nice of Shalom, Kikris Yamsev means Mitzad Mekabel. The person who needs it, the person who needs Pranasa to him is just as difficult as the one who needs the Yeshua, who needs Kikris Yamsev. But the question is, if you want to compare difficulties, why of all things choose Kikris Yamsev as an explanation of how difficult one's Pranasa might be? Aval Yesh Lahovin still. Now Hadimian, if you want to compare it and to understand it a little bit more to the point, to focus better, we have to understand what is the exact Dimian, what's the comparison? Then Abikush Lahasogis Pranasa, when somebody needs and he's hoping for his panosa, let's the peace of Yeshua, when somebody is waiting for Yeshua, lifne kriyas yamsuf. How do we compare? Yes, this is a tzara and this is a tzara, but what basically is the common denominator between these two? Achimotsu chazal unochin, that chazal found it appropriate to compare the two. He says, lahakshu b'neim, to make a kesher between the two, v'loim had to say, sh'oysa sh'o hakosha toyamim yaldo, that they're very similar. So what really is the similarity when we say we compare the difficulty of one's panosa for him? Is as difficult as the Jewish people standing before the Yamsuf and they needed the Yeshua. So what is the line that binds or ties really both of these particular different, totally different tzaras to say that what? To try to compare them. So he says the following. The meaning of comparing a person really who is waiting for his panosa, a person who is really, he is suffering, he is waiting and he is hoping, to compare it to Kriyas Yamsuf, to the people who are waiting for Kriyas Yamsuf, the comparison. Because the Hine, let's analyze and put ourselves in the shoes of the people. This is Parshas Bishalach, standing, of course, at the shore, standing at the shore, at the edge of the Yamsuf, and they are waiting for Yeshua. What was the situation? So imagine the following. He said, he says that time, he said, lifting Kriyas Yamsuf, Motsu Yisoros Atzmon Bitzori Gedoyla, Mikol Tzedodeyem. What is unique about the idea of the matzav that they found themselves, the situation that they found themselves by Kriyas Yamsuf, that they were in a tzar from all sides, frontwards and backwards. From behind, umitzdodeim, and from the side, eine misruim unachoshim vakrabim, he says, lechelcho yitzpoinu. In other words, there was also in the wilderness. So you had wild animals, and you had snakes, and you had misruim, and you had enemy from behind. You had so many different situations that were lurking. Umilafneim and the front, which was the only marikim of escape in the front, what did they have? They had the Yamsuf, they had the Yam, they had the sea. Hoyahayama Sawyer, you had the, of course you had the Yam, the stormy Yam. Asher, he says, Herim Galov, which was raising its waves as if to swallow them up alive, Kilu Omer, as if it was saying, Livlo Yoisam Chaim. So the Choshu B'nai Yisrael, Shechaz V'sholem, Ovis Mem Kol Tikva, if you're surrounded from all sides and there's no escape, the natural thing is you do not see any way out. There's no way out. It is not possible to get out. So you fall into a situation of despair and you say all is lost. They thought that there was really no hope anymore. Because this is the mash lo yasa shemizborach avurom. He says, because the truth is, no matter what a Kodesh Baruch Hu would do, what's he going to do? He's going to kill the Mitzrayim. They still have the, so you still have all the other dangers that they are surrounded with. Oy barigas anachoshuk adayim bechetz keskona. Vezeh hoya koshuk Kriyas Yamsuf. Kriyas Yamsuf was a situation the lefi matzovam, because according to the matzav, the oz nidmalahem shegiya kisam. They thought that this is the end, clearly. Because there did not seem to be any opening, there was no hole. They were able to escape. Now, Rabbi, if you can imagine when the Jewish people, the Yidden, were standing in front of the Yamsuf. Now, if even assume that there were quite a number of people that said, yes, there's going to be a Yeshua. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will help. I don't know how. But let's say there were Yidden that had Amun and Bitoch, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in fact, is going to help them. The last thing in the world that they would imagine is that it's going to be that the sea is going to split. That could not even have dawned on them. That is the first thing for their imagination. Yidden was standing by Kriyas Yamsuf, hoping for Yeshua. It doesn't seem to be any possibility. But Avada, let's say, okay, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to do it some way. But the last thing that you would be able to create in your mind that the Yeshua is going to come through Kriyas Yamsuf. And it did. So what do you see from here? From Kriyas Yamsuf, you see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is able to provide salvation from a source that is the furthest thing away from your belief and reality in your mind, and that's where the issue is going to come from. That's what you found out by Kriyas Yam Suf. He says, what did Kodesh Baruch Hu do? Him tzilem Yeshua b'derech nifla kazeh, in such a wondrous, in such an amazing way, shebechlal loy ola al datam, this was such a far-fetched Yeshua, that it didn't even dawn on them, lachsho, if she yitochen, it's even possible, sheyikre, he says, dover kazeh, hayne sheyikre hayam lefneem. And then what happened is, in addition to that, the water then turned back and swallowed up and drowned the Mitzrim. So the Yeshua from all around, this tremendous nest that happened, was something that even, he says, someone who has even a wild imagination, in your wildest imagination, you couldn't come up with this. This is something you couldn't come up with. And in fact, this is what happened. And they're going to be able to walk through the Yam as if it's dry land. So he says, the same way that Kriyas Yam Suf is such an unexpected Yeshua, same thing as Parnosa. Kodesh Baruch Hu has ways to provide Parnosa from sources which might be the furthest away from whatever you might imagine, but that's what the Bitochen is. That's the Koshim Mezenois HaShulam. That's the comparison. That the difficulty for the person who is receiving, who is waiting for Parnosa, like Kriyas Yam Suf. What's the comparison? But the same way that Kriyas Yam Suf sees something would have seemed impossible, you find yourself in a situation also in difficulty. Where's my Parnosa going to come from? All my doors seem to be closed. All my contacts I've lost. Kriyas Yam Suf happened in a way that you would never imagine, but it came. Parnosa also, Kodesh Baruch Hu can provide from a source that might be furthest away from your imagination. Just like Kriyas Yam Suf. Kodesh Baruch Hu might make Kriyas Yam Suf for you to provide your Parnosa. It means something that's the furthest way. You never would have thought that this is going to be a source. This is going to open up new doors, new vistas to be able to earn a livelihood. This same type of difficulty a person might encounter. Many times, person has, he says, logically, he takes a piece of paper and makes a plan. Well, this is one possible source for me, this is one possible source. And then when he tries them, they don't work out, he sits back, I'm lost. My sources are gone. So a person, Madame Benafsho, he imagines, his panasosa is going to come from this business. Or maybe, or let's say a second business. That he's going to try to do. Then he sees it goes up in smoke. Many times he's very close just to falling apart in his spirit. And he thinks there's no source anymore, there's no hope to be helped. To connect Hasogas Apanosa, Lahodi Kriyas Yam Suf, to compare achieving one's goal, attaining Parnosa, acquiring Parnosa, similar to Kriyas Yam Suf. Why again? To console a person, to give chizuk to a person, to console him, to comfort him in his matzovei hakosh, in his difficult matzah bedvarim nechumim. They want to give him words of comfort, words of solace. They say to him, kach lochom musar haskel mikriyas Yam Suf. Learn from Kriyas Yam Suf, this week's parsha. Kriyas Yam Suf created a totally new source, an unbelievable source, a non-existent source. Kriyas Yam Suf created a hamtzoa chadosha v'noishu al yodin to become saved. Gamato, you too, don't despair. Loitis yaish, betiyeh betuach shehashem yizborach. Rely and have trust that Kriyas Yam Suf asher bereiv rachma v'chasodav. Kriyas Yam Suf, with all of his compassion, he does sustain all of life in the entire world, all the animals, all the insects, sonum mefarnes lakoil, mikarne re'emin ad beitzachinim. He says, from the mighty animals, the large mighty animals, until he says the lowly little lice, the eggs of the lice, that they should survive. So Kodesh Baruch Hu really sustains the entire creation. So he has no room for you. Bevada yamtzi lecho ke'ein bria chadosh. If necessary, Kodesh Baruch Hu will find a new source, literally a bria chadosh, a new creation. Ashlo yola datcho klal, something that you never thought of. Of all of your ideas, you thought all your ideas are gone. Kodesh Baruch Hu will find you new ideas that you never thought existed. Bezei lecho lemekar chayim, and this will be to you a source of life. He says, ledalos memena, here's where you're going to draw handfuls, he says, of Ashpoa Toive, a totally new Bria Chadosha, a totally new source. Maloichef Naim Shal Ashpoa Toive. Mentioned quite a number of years ago, there was one of the Balei Musar who was a Mashgiach in Tells Cleveland, Rav Gavriel Ginsberg, Zerchon Lavrocha, very choshev yid, who later on moved from Taos Cleveland, came to Kew Gardens, and he also was there part of the staff, sort of like a under Rosh Yeshiva in Chofetz Chaim, when it was still in Forest Hills. From there, he actually received a new position, a very choshev position. He became Rosh Yeshiva of Neri Yisrael in Toronto. And unfortunately, he was nifter quite young. Being that he lived in Kew Gardens for quite a while, Yibod L'chaim, we became quite befriended, and we used to be in touch quite a bit. As a matter of fact, when this shul, actually the old shul, when we did Daf Yomi the very first time, so after 7 years, our first Sima Shas, I had invited him to, we made our own, so besides the grand Sima Shas, but in the shul itself, we made a Sima Shas, our own Sima Shas, and I invited him to say Furis with Gavriel Ginsberg. In any case, he mentioned Eivart, which I repeated. I was maspid him in Kew Gardens in Shir Tzeres Moshe. They had a hespit for him after he was nifter, even though he had moved away already, but nevertheless, being that he was in Kew Gardens for so many years, a lot of people really felt the tsar. And I mentioned what he said in the name of Rav Gifter. And what did he say? You'll see where it fits in with what we're learning today. He says, Yaakov Avinu goes, and he somehow, of course, is very successful to maneuver the brachas that Yitzchak intended to give to Esav, and he's able to maneuver it, and it turns out that Yitzchak instead gives the brachas to Yaakov Avinu. Esav walks in through the door, and he finds out that his brother Yaakov, so to speak, stole the brachas from him. Right? He stole the brachas from him, so he goes to Yitzchak and says, Yitzchak, give me also a bracha. He goes to his father, says, give me a bracha. And Yitzchak says, I have no bracha to give you. If you might remember, that's the way the tshuva, this was the answer that Yitzchak said. I've given it away to your brother. I have no bracha to give you. Later on, we find that in fact, Yitzchak, so Esav cajoles back and forth, and Yitzchak gives him a bracha. He says also, V'yitem lecha. As a matter of fact, it seems to be quite close to the bracha that he said to Yaakov, that the Mefarshim go on to explain, no, there's a difference. He didn't give the same bracha to both. But it's also another V'yitem lecha. He said V'yitem lecha, he said to Yaakov, and he said V'yitem lecha to Esav. And the question is, what happened? What happened? Yitzchak said, I have no bracha to give you. Yitzchak said, I have no bracha to give you. So all of a sudden, he had a bracha to give him. Where did he take the bracha from? Where did he get it from? There was no bracha. There was nothing left. So Rav Ginsberg said, over in the name of Rav Gifter, who was his Rosh Yeshiva. He said, because there's a pasuk there in between, a little bit before. When Esav heard from his father that there's no bracha, that Yitzchak Esav began to cry out. So Oka Gedoyla, tremendous cry. He said, that cry, he says, appealing, please, please give me a bracha, that cry went up to Shemayim and created a new source of bracha. Yes, there was no source, but because of Esav's cry, the koich of the cry, the power of the cry of the krechts, was able to create a new source that did not exist till now. And it was from that source he gave him a bracha. So he pointed out a tremendous thing. If a krechts of an Esav of a Rosha has such a koich in Shemayim, can you imagine a yid? All you have to do when Chalila Chaz Hashem you're in trouble, you turn to Kodesh Baruch Hu and with a true heart, with sincerity, you cry out to Hashem, say, Baruch Hashem, you have to help me. Please help me. Can you imagine what kind of Rosh this is going to make in Shemayim? The krechts, the cry of an Esav of a Rosha, Vayitzah, Esav cried out. And that was able to create a new makor, a new source of bracha that not existed. So there are ways where it appears to be totally bleak, totally dark, and yet, Kodesh Baruch Hu will create, just allow Him to create it, just put your trust in Hashem, and you'll be able to find a Bria Chadosh, as we point out over here, of what you never thought of, furthest away from your imagination, to be able to find the source of Yeshua. There's one more interesting thing here, we bring here, number two, the second item, the Sefer called, as you see, Ma'ore Oran Tilim. And it brings a vart, he says, from Rabbi Yitzchak Skverer. Rabbi Yitzchak Skverer is the Zayde of today's Skverer Rebbe in Square Town. Rabbi Yitzchak Skverer was a grandfather. And he says the following. David HaMelech Tehillim says he found himself surrounded with enemies. David HaMelech finds himself in a situation where it does not seem that he's able to survive. He does not find a way to help himself. So he says, Ma'ayin Yovei Ezri. Where will my help come from? And then he answers the question. He says, Ezri mim Hashem oise Shemayim v'yoretz. He says, my help will come from Hashem who created Shemayim v'yoretz. So it brings down as follows, that Pamachas, There was a time that said that Bo Balabayis Echod Lifnei Harava Kodesh Rebitzchok Meskvira Zechet Tzadik Vikodesh Lebrochot. Turns out that once a Balbos, a Yid came. He came to the Rebbe. He's not Lefonov. And he poured out his heart, he complained, Moid. He has no outlet. He tried everything. He has no way. He has no idea. He does not have any idea, no notion where, how is he going to be able to provide. He has no pranosa. Where is his help going to come from? He says, so he said to him, you know what he said? Which means like this, new meaning in the words he said. You know what the words mean? Ma'ayin usually means mind. From where? Ayin also means from nothing. Yesh ma'ayin. Because Baruch Hu created the world, yesh ma'ayin. He made something from nothing, out of nothing. Ex nihilo. The Melech says, ma'ayin yovei yezri. Even when it looks ayin, it seems to be there's nothing around. There's no source. There's no opening. There's absolute nothing. Ma'ayin yovei yezri. He says, "Kainu ki Hashem who Rav lo Hashem Kodesh Baruch Hu has the ability to help gam ma'ayin gomur, even if it's mamish ayin, totally, completely ayin. There's nothing there. The yesh muchlik to turn it into a very positive yesh, into a something. The harai, what's the proof? What's the proof that Hashem, right? That Hashem can overturn ayin into yesh, can make from nothing something. Ki ezrosi Hashem, he says, the harai ki ezrosi Hashem gam ma'ayin tia halinu Hashem." Goes ahead and to that extent to make something out of totally nothing. When he created the world, he also did that. He created the world out of ayin gomer, completely, totally nothing. It was waste and desolate, and he turned into yesh muchlet, into a positive yesh. Because before creation says clearly, it was completely, totally waste. The Atah now, after creation, he turned it into an Oyer Godel B'chol Moshviseinu. Tremendous light all over the world. V'zehu Oyser Shemayim V'yoret. So, Ezri, Ma'ayin Yovei Ezri, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's not a question. Ma'ayin Yovei Ezri. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will provide a Yeshua Ma'ayin. What's the proof? Because Ezri Mim Hashem, Oyser Shemayim V'yoret, the same way that he created Shemayim V'yoret. Shemayim V'yoret is clearly created that way. It was Yesh Mi'ayin. The same way that he was Oyser Shemayim V'yoret, it was out of Ayin. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can also provide the Yeshua. Which is very interesting, a little, as I say, it's a cute word that we have here. If you see the last item, it's in a sefer called Teiris Ovis from the Shlonim Rebbe. You see, take the word Oni. Unfortunately, someone's poor, it's Ayin Nun Yud. Take the immediate letters after. What's the letter after Ayin? It's a Pei. Yes, Nun, right? What's Nun? You have a Samach. And after a Yud, Chof, that's Kesef. Following Anias, following poverty, Kesef can still come. So he pointed out and he said, Oisius Kesef him achrei Oisius Oni. The immediate three letters, after the three letters of Oni, the Nirmaz Bozeh, what is it coming to teach us? Ki im yamtin ho Oni al hashgachos yisborach ol yoino. The person just will rely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hashgoche, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's divine, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's divine hashgoche, v'lo Yisrayim yizke lekesef al hashiris. Oni is not the end of the line. There's still something after that. You're still able to be zeche, of course, to kesef. So these are some of the things Rabbi Yisai. As we say, this is Parsha B'Shalach, this is Parsha of Kriyas Yamsuf. So of course, we can have these gula. We have these gulas hayoim, of course, to learn from this. And to realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Ma'ayin Yovei Ezri, no matter what the situation is. Ezri Mim Hashem, Oyser Shemayim V'yoretz. And the Yeshua can come from the furthest way, the inexplicable ways, ways that you could not imagine. This is the way it was by Kriyas Yamsuf. And that's why it says, Kol Sheh, it says, Mezoinoysef Shalodon, just like Kriyas Yamsuf, that it'll come from the sources where HaKadosh Baruch Hu will make it happen. So now, Rabbi, so we go to the Chovis Avodis. Let's take a look. It's in page Reish Chov Zayin. Reish Chov Zayin. It's five lines from the bottom. Five lines on the Reish Chov Zayin. It's Ulechol Odom Yesh Chayfetz. It's that five lines from the bottom. Ulechol Odom Yesh Chayfetz. Chovis Avodis says here that the truth is, that's an interesting thing. Even in earning livelihoods, there's so many different professions a person can go into. People make choices, of course, be an accountant, be a doctor, be a lawyer, whatever it should be. Because Avov says these ideas were implanted in your mind by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that you should have an affinity to a particular profession. Why did some people like numbers and some people don't? Why? Why do some people like others and things and other people reject it? So you think this is your taste. Who made it to be this way, your taste? Says the Chovis Avov is the following. Which means every person, yesh chayfetz b'melocha ischayre, every person has a particular, right? Chayfetz means there's a particular rotzen, there's a particular desire to a particular work, or ischayre or business, mibilti zolosoi, over any other. There's certain professions that you really would like to be involved with more than any other. So he says, because kvar hitbiya loshen teva, because Baruch Hu implanted, he says, lo betivoi, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in fact, implanted in your nature, in man's nature, ahava v'chibo, right, a love and an affection, he says, regarding your profession. So this was already pre-planned, by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, designing it this way. V'chein b'shar ha-chayim, but it's not only by you, he says, it's also in the animal world. As you'll soon see, the animal world also, how each, the nature of different species, how they provide their sustenance, because Baruch Hu implanted it that they should know exactly what is needed, what type of foods is for them, and what type of foods for others. Animals need different climates, animals need different food. Animals have different ways, of course, of how to achieve, how to acquire their food. Because Baruch Hu, how do they know how to do it? How does animal A know how to hunt this way, and how does animal B know he has to do it the other way? So he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's what means V'chein b'shar ha-chayim. The same thing is regarding all the other living creatures. He says, K'moi shehitzbiya b'teva. In the same way HaKadosh Baruch Hu implanted an instinct. HaChosul, say that's what achborim. HaKadosh implanted in the instinct of a cat that he chases mice. How does a cat know that? Part of his nature. Who implanted that? This is part of the HaKadosh Baruch Hu's planting the instinct. This is for the cat to do. U'b'teva ha-neitz. And the Kodesh Baruch Hu implanted, for example, in the nature of a hawk, right? Seidas mashiroi loy. In the nature of a hawk, a Kodesh Baruch Hu implanted what's appropriate for him, minoif. What does he do? He goes after birds. He kills birds. Ube teva ha'ayil, or in the teva of deer and such similar animals, seidas anachoshim, to go after snakes and so on. So too, for example, you have birds. Kodesh Baruch Hu implanted that they eat fish. Yeah, birds, of course, they go fishing, as we know. They have the long beaks. So he points out, there are some of the birds. Some birds go after fish, some don't. Some have not. Some can't ingest even fish. How, who, what, when? Kodesh Baruch Hu implanted in different birds, in different animals, in different creatures, each one his own nature, into the species. Sheyotzudu hadogim levad. These particular birds, they catch fish alone. V'chein esoan b'teva min v'min m'min achayim. Esoan Kodesh Baruch Hu implants into the nature of all the different species. Netiyah v'taiva, they should have a liking and a desire. El min m'min atzmochim. Some eat plants. Some animals eat plants. Kodesh Baruch Hu implanted in those animals that they should eat plants. And some eat living, other living animals. V'achayim. Or maybe to eat other animals. Hitbia all of Leoi Sibyl Mizoinoi. Kodesh Baruch Hu implanted that this should be the way they sustain themselves. That's their mizoinus. Not only that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, created them the configuration of their limbs. Their configuration of their limbs and their bodies are clearly attuned with tremendous ingenuity to allow them to be able to pursue their prey, bedavka, according to their nature. The type of food that they need, HaKadosh provided. He gave them the tools. Right? Carpenter needs a screwdriver. Well, a certain, what your prey is, you need those tools. Because Baruch Hu made the design of the body. Utchunas gufoi ve'evorov, he says. The configuration, he says, of the body and the limbs, re'uyim l'dovrahu. He made it appropriate to be able to pursue those foods that they need. For example, he says, kapeh ha'oruch, for example, the long bill. The long bill of the bird, the long legs, those who have to go after fish, he gave them the long bill, the long legs. The kashen, that's the point. What about the special teeth and the claws, hachozok, the powerful larif of the lion, and the similar animals like him? Kishbok provided the lion. He says, and what about the hakarnayim lishor? And for the ox, he provided the horns, v'la'ayil, and so on, to the ram. Vashetuchan mezoinoi, he says, menatzemach, and those who only eat plants, they don't have these horns. He says, they don't have, he says, these claws. They don't have these specifically sharp teeth. Le'nosen le'klei hatzayid v'aterif. They not give them, he says, those tools of hunting, he says, and or the claws of prey and so on. So you clearly see HaKadosh Baruch Hu designs, and the same in the animal world. So that's evident. The animals is evident that HaKadosh Baruch Hu even configured the body that be able that different species according to what type of food they need. HaKadosh Baruch Hu configured and designed them. So if HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave all the blueprint for all of the creatures in the animal world, so don't you think that he gave certain design and certain, he says, desires towards profession and so on, he says, to human beings? Who are the crown of creation? HaKadosh Baruch Hu only worried about the animal world? About the bird world he worried about? To design them in order that they should be able to provide for themselves? And don't you think that human beings are also given the ability and the ideas which HaKadosh Baruch Hu would implant into their minds? And to give them the wherewithal to be able to do it? So it says, Valadim Yonazeh, he said, for therefore, comparing to that, Timsa, you'll find Midos B'nei Yodam. People, by the way, have different characteristics. Based upon their Midos, by the way, based upon their Midos also, many jobs are not for them. For example, someone who is an angry person, by nature, unless he works on it, of course, to try to change it, it says, V'lo Yakabdan Malamed. Someone who is an angry nature cannot be a teacher. So it says, V'lo Yakabdan Malamed. By the way, Shimon V'levi Yachim, Klei Chomas Mechei Reseim, we find Shimon V'levi Yachim, and we see that what they acted very hastily. They acted very hastily in order, without consulting with Yaakov Avinu, when they killed out the entire city of Shechem. And Rashi says, so the retribution, the Yoinish that came back is, well, is Rashi says that Shevet Shimon are teachers, Melamdim and Seferim. And Rabbi Kamenetsky once said, so what's the Midah Keneged Midah? He says, why make them into teachers? Be Melamdim Tenoikis, to teach children. He says, because the opposite of anger is to have discipline and to have control is if you're a teacher. So the tikkun, he says, the refinement in the characteristic of Shimon V'Levi, with Dafke went so hastily, so quick, and out of anger, right, to do what they did without consulting Yaakov Avinu. So the antidote to that, the other side, the midah keneged is, make him a teacher. Can be a teacher mean to say is, it was a message, as if to say, you really have to work now on that, to be able to refine that area in your life, the area of kas, for example. So, depending on a person's midos, that itself will allow him or disallow him from certain jobs, from certain professions. You see, he says, you'll find midos b'nei olam v'gufoysom, and their bodies mukhonis l'schayrus l'mlochis. Powerful people, people who are very strong. And then you have people, of course, who are weak. I mean, they just their bodies just don't have all the power. People who are weak, of course, are not suited to carrying lumber. People who are strong, they're possible to carry loads. They can go into professions that involve physical strength, that you need physical strength. And he goes on to point out. He says, you'll take a look, so it's according to the configuration, he says, of your body, that itself will also lend itself to certain possibilities that other people may not have due to their configuration. Whether characteristics, midos, whether physical attributes, strength, weaknesses, good eyesight, weaker hearing, so on and so forth, as he goes on to point out. So he says, if you take a look, Mishemoitze b'midoisa v'tivo, he says, Koisev al malochim amlochis. You find a person who's really, Koisev means that he is desiring. You find a person who has a desire. The word Koisev, ki nichsev nichsafti, means to desire also. Kesev doesn't just mean kesev, money. But the shortage of the word means more than that. So he says, so a person who has a desire from a certain profession, among other professions, a particular work, right, among many other works, the Yegufay Ruelo, so if his body is something that is fit, he can take it on, the Yuchel Lizbol is Atirche, and his body is strong enough to be able to tolerate, right, the Tirche, which means what it involves, the difficulty of the work, or the heavy load of the work, Yechazer Aleo, he may have somehow something, a drive towards that Molochim, because being that his body physically is suited for that. The Yosef Moisa, he will make that a heavy type of a work. Siba lahavoyes mezoinoi. So he'll make that heavy type of a work that should be a root, that should be a medium for his mezoinoi, for his sustenance. The Yisboil, and he will be able to tolerate Mosko umri rosa, the sweetness and the bitterness. Some of the unfortunate point out when he says to tolerate the sweetness and the bitterness means, well, heavy work, you know, if you're strong enough, you can do it. But at the same time, the sweetness is that you're making a living. The bitterness is that what? That it's heavy work. It's tiresome. So, but this is your profession. Work is not always easy. You have to put in the time, and sometimes it involves a lot of physical work, so you're going to have this, you're going to bear the sweetness and the bitter part. The bitter part is having to work. Having to work using physical power. At the same time, you're making a panosa, so you have the sweetness and you have the bitterness. And he says, Vayokutz, he says, a person should not reject Yeshimunim Ameno Hatera Biksas with him. Sometimes you have a profession. There's ups and downs, says the Chovis HaVovis. Maybe this is a panosa for you. But the moment that you find that it's going down, right away you want to abandon it. And you're trying to look for something new. So he says, maybe you're making a mistake sometimes. You really have to evaluate, he says. Don't reject it, because sometimes you're going to find out. Because if you're suitable for a job, he says, maybe first try a little bit on your bitochin and Hashem strengthening yourself. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bring it back up again. Ach yiftach balikim. But rather, he says, HaBitochin HaKadosh Baruch Hu sheyasip kloy tirfoy. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be able to sustain you and give you your panose enough kol yimechayev all of your life. So Rabbi Yisai, we'll go just a few more lines here. V'yechavin b'tir das liboy. V'gufoy b'sibo men asibois. He says, when a person is being mishtadel, when a person is doing the acts of his parnosa, your mindset is also very important. In other words, when he's thinking about his livelihood, when his guf is involved, his leif means his machshov and his guf, b'sibum and asibois, in all of the various ways of his parnosa, when he's thinking about it. Vasibu valeo, sibu means when he's pursuing it. So the one thing he says, parnosa, you realize, you're being mekayim and mitzvah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, b'zei sapecho toicho lechem. The Chazavavah says, so whenever you're going to work, have in mind you're doing a mitzvah, he says. Look what he says. La'amoid b'mitzvahs ha'boireh. Shetzivo ha'odom, that what you should have in mind. You are doing gzeirah, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he says, I could have provided you anyway. But this was gzeirah, as he already went through it, the reasons why he said it's a toiva that people have to work for a living. Remember, one of the reasons was that you don't have time to sin. Remember, that was one of the reasons that he said over there. He gave a few reasons, he says, why it's really a toiva in the long shot. The long shot, in the bigger picture, it's a toiva that people have to work for a living. And that's, by the way, people who retire and they're still healthy and well, best thing for them is not to retire right away. To live a healthier life, more active type of a life, and we know that. This has been proven many, many times over. So he says over here, but at least, so I have in mind that this is a mitzvah, shetziva adam lisasik b'sibes olam, that man was commanded to be oisik b'sibes olam, b'avoidus adoma, whether in agriculture, v'charishosa, plowing, z'riyosa, sowing, planting. K'mon shekotzev, it says, v'yikach Hashem l'kim es adam, k'mon shebrochu took adam harishoin, v'yanechei, we placed him in the Garden of Eden, began Eden, l'ovdo l'shomra, to work it and to guard it. K'mon shebrochu put the entire creation at man's disposal. Lishtamish bishar balachayim, right? We use the oxen, we use horses to plow, we use cows and so on. You make use of the animals, betoyaloisov, to benefit, umizoinov, and for his parnosif, ubinyan amadinois, and to build cities, vachonas amazoinis, and preparing food. Lishtamish banoshim, to marry women, valiva loisom laharbis azera, to be fruitful, to multiply. All this is part of the mitzvah of living in a productive world. The yeniska al kavanosa, and you get rewarded if you have this kavana, so you're getting rewarded, he said, al kavanosa behem, for his proper kavana, lelikim beliboy matzpune, deep in his inner heart, that he has in mind and he understands that he's fulfilling a mission ordained by Shemayim. And by the way, and even if you're unsuccessful, you still have the mitzvah. So a person went through the motions and he put in very hard and he was not matzliach, the business didn't work out, but the mitzvah you still have. All the effort that you put in at the end of the day, even if you were not successful panosa wise for this time, but the mitzvah and the reward in Shemayim you're going to get. Ben sheyigmaloi chepsoi, whether he achieved that which his goals were that he wanted to do. Ben sheloi yigmaloi chepsoi, when he's not successful, does not have that tzlochin in what he wants to do. When she calls it, the pasuk says, "Until him yikapecho kisoichel." He says, "Ashrecho v'toivloch, those who eat from the fruit of their labors, it'll be good for you." From Rabbi Sein, who was a Chloim Rebroche, and our Rebbe said, "V'chol ma'asecho yi l'shem Shemayim." So no matter what you do, you're using a panosa, it should be l'shem Shemayim, for Hashem's sake. "V'hi b'tchoyne b'lekim sholim." So no matter what the situation is, be firm in your bitochim. "V'le yazikenu hasibu v'al hasibus," he says, a person should not worry that maybe he's oisik in his panosa, so at that time maybe he could have learned more or that. He says, because why? Because you're oisik in panosa is also a mitzvah, he says. "V'le yazikenu," will not be harmed. A person who's oisik in panosa, "v'le yazikenu hasibu v'al hasibus." Sibu means the fact that you're pursuing the different mediums. "L'havois tirfoy," he says, "b'hein ma'uma." You're not going to be harmed. harm, because if you have it l'shem shemayim in mind, kishu muchen behem beliboy u'mitzpoina in his inner self, he says l'shem shemayim. So then, at the end of the day, you always come out a winner. Let me tell you, Rabbi Yisrael, we stop now over here. Time has moved on. Let me just tell you that in London there is a choshev yid, Reb Chanoich Ehrentraub. He died in London. And at a gathering in Yerushalayim, thousands who came there to a convention center, well known as the Binyonei HaUma in Yerushalayim, in Eretz Yisrael, he told the following story. It was a lecture that he was giving, and he mentioned the following. It happened to be a lecture on Shemiras Haloshen, guarding your tongue and so on and so forth, interpersonal relationships. So he pointed out the following, and here it tells us a little bit. We see what it means to be talking about Hashem, what it means how Hashem runs the world, and also how to be careful of how we deal with people, interpersonal relationships. Let me mention the following. In the late 1800s, in the town of Telz, famous yeshiva town, Telz in Lithuania, they were looking for a rov. They were looking for a rov to succeed. The rov at the time was the name of Yeshua Heller. Yeshua Heller was nifter in 1880. Choshev Rov in Telz, and he was a Talmud. Rabbi Yeshua Heller was a Talmud of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. So he was a Talmud of Yisrael Salanter who was leaving to accept a position in Vilna. So Rabbi Yeshua Heller leaves Telz in 1880, right, in order to accept a new position in Vilna. So there were many applicants, Rabbonim, for this position, to a prestigious position to be the Rov of Telz. And at the time, among the many applicants was someone by the name of Rab Abba Werner. Rab Abba Werner already was in Telz. What was he doing in Telz? Well, at the time when there was the Rav, before the Rav left, there was Dayonim, there was a Beis Din, and he was the head of the Beis Din, of the Dayonim. He wasn't the Rav, but he was the Av Beis Din, he was the head of the Beis Din. So Maele, the Rav left, Rabbi Heller left, so he figured, the only right. He's already in Telz. He'd been functioning as a dayan, as a judge. So Melan, he's the Av Beis Din, he's the head. So who would be more appropriate to take as the Rav would be him. So he assumed that he would become the Rav of Telz, Rav Abba Werner. So he was, as a matter of fact, he was convinced and so on and so forth. Turns out that we planned many, many times, and to his chagrin, it turned out that in fact the community chose an outsider. And that hurt. They chose an outsider, an older Talmud Chochom, who never lived in Telz, Rabbi Elazar Gordon. Elazar Gordon, famous Rav of Telz. So I want to tell you just as an aside, Elazar Gordon, one of the Gedoyi Yisrael, Rabbi Chaim Brisker considered Rabbi Elazar Gordon to be the greatest in Ahavas HaTorah, in the love of learning. Interesting, you talk about Gavlus B'Torah, knowledge and learning, you talk about Hasimodah. There's also an area called Ahavas HaTorah. You can be a Godel, the great in Ahavas HaTorah. No one loved learning, the love of learning, as Rabbi Elazar Gordon. It is said that Rabbi Elazar Gordon, on the way to Yishul, on a Shabbos, or during the day, if he passed the Beis Medrash in Telz, and he would hear people learning, and it would be something that was, he would stop in his tracks, go into the Beis Medrash, and be mefalpul, get right involved with whatever they were learning. It is said that when he was standing at the bimah, giving a drosha, and someone in the middle of the drosha would ask a kasha, would ask a question, he would go off the bimah, go up to the next person, start being mefalpul and learning with him. He'd forget bechlal. Oh, there's an opportunity to talk and learn him. Redna Len, the Elazar Gordon. So why am I mentioning this? Because once in Brisk, Reb Chaim was marrying off one of his sons, not sure which one it was, he was marrying off one of his sons, and Reb Elazar Gordon happened to be in Telz. Reb Chaim gave him the kibbutz of being Mesadeh Kedushin, Reb Elazar Gordon. He said, there's no one greater in Ahavas HaTorah, he said, than Rabbi Elazar Gordon. So Elazar Gordon becomes the Rav of Telz. Rabbi Abba Werner, who thought he was going to get it, he couldn't remain in Telz. They passed over him. It would be too much hurt after all this. So after the inauguration, as Rabbi Elazar Gordon was inaugurated, he quietly leaves the community. He goes to Helsinki in Finland. And shortly afterward, he becomes accepted in a position as rabbi of a large kehillah known as the Machzikei Hadas Shul in London. Machzikei Hadas, very, very prestigious shul. So Rabbi Werner does not become Rav in Telz, he becomes Rav in London. No, Rav Elazar Gordon, part of his responsibilities, he becomes Rav of Telz, was also to oversee the Shechita. So, Rav in those days, of course, the Shechit had to answer. The Shechit had to answer to the Rav. And the Shechit of the time was a Yid by the name of Reb Mendel Rappaport. Name of the Shechit. Realized we're turning to the early part of the century, previous century. Mendel Rappaport was a veteran shaykhit. He was taken aback. Reb Leizer going to a new Rav, says, I have to fahir you. I have to test you. Says, you can't fahir me. You're going to fahir. You know how many years I'm shechting already here? I was good for the previous Rav. I was good for everybody. Everybody was eating from my shechita. He was very upset. Reb Leizer Gordon was sort of like interrogating him about his knowledge about the various halachis. He took it as an affront with Mendel Rappaport, and he felt that his integrity was being questioned, the fact that he's testing him out. And after the interview, he decided he would never shecht again. And Remendel moved to London, and he becomes a very prosperous businessman. The shechet, he was not there. No, city of Tells, Rabbi Yisai flourishes, and Rabbi Leizer Gordon becomes Rosh Yeshiva in Tells. And Rosh Yeshiva in Tells became a tremendous Mokim Torah center of learning, and of course it gained wide recognition, and of course you know the rest of history is it's transplanted here on the American shores and so on and so forth. You have Tells in Cleveland, you have in Chicago, right, and you have in Riverdale, all over the place. Tells, that's what started over there. In 1910, a fire destroyed the yeshiva building in Tells, in Europe. And as a result, there was tremendous anxiety and there was apprehension, and the task of rebuilding was meant, it was something that seemed potentially insurmountable. And there was no other way to raise money to rebuild the yeshiva. Reb Leizer Gordon had to undertake, says, the unenviable task to raise money. And at that time, it seemed to be the best place to go was to go to London to raise money. So Reb Leizer Gordon makes the trip. Wasn't easy those days. Makes a trip, goes to London. The yeshiva, by the way, was always supported by people in Russia, Poland, Ukraine. But in any case, now he has to break new ground. He has to find new sources to be able to support the yeshiva, and he goes to London. As he walks in, the Machzikei Hadas Shul. Who down there? Also, Reb Mendel Rappaport, the old Sheikhet. As he walks in, he didn't recognize him, but Remendel recognized the Rav right away. He greeted him, and after Myrav, as a matter of fact, he invites him to his home. He had a home, it was like a palace. At his palatial home, Remendel reminded Rabbi Gordon, he said he's not going to let him get away with it, he reminded him that I'd been a Sheikhet in Tells. I was a Sheikhet in Tells. He says, more than 20 years ago. He says, and I recalled even the questions that the Rav asked him when he tested him over the Hilchos of Shechita. He recalled the questions. And Reb Leizer Gordon realized that Remendel all along harbored tremendously ill feelings towards him for being offended at the time. So Remendel, he says, I had no idea that you felt slighted. It was certainly not my intention to question your competence as a Shechit. I did what I felt as the responsibility of a Rav. But if you did feel slighted, so now, 20 years later, please forgive me if I hurt you in any way. I'm truly sorry. And Remendel says, of course I forgive you. I have truthfully long forgotten about the matter, but look how Hashem plays it out. I was destined to come to England to become a Gvir, to become an Oysher. Had you not verheard me, and had it not been slighted by you, he said, I would have stayed there. So it turns out, he says that, all for the better. He says, the ill feelings that I may have had for a while, he said, at the time turned out that Hashem had his ways how to make me leave Tells and to come to England. He says, and matter of fact, he said, you can forget it, and it's truly an honor to have you in my home, he said to him. Look, you were the cause of me, Baruch Hashem, being Matzliach here. Remendel then suggested that he revisit the Rav of the Machzik Hadas Shul. Well, who's the Rav? The Rav was Rabbi Abaye Werner. Visit the Rav to see how they could raise money for the Tells Yeshiva. Well, the two Rabbonim get together, and you know, the first thing, Reb Leizer Gordon gets involved in learning, they talk in learning and so on and so forth. After a while, they begin to reminisce about their earlier days. And here again, Reb Abaye Werner also says, I'm not going to let him get away with it, he says to himself. And he says to him, he says, I was the head, he says, of the Bezin. At least before you accepted the position of Rav, why did you come and ask my permission? It's okay with me. Instead of walking over me, right, as if I didn't exist, and you accepted the position. Here again, says Reb Leizer Gordon. Leizer Gordon says, I really feel terrible. And again, it was not my intention, he says, and so on and so forth. And I apologize for not coming to you before. Please forgive me. And here again, Reb Abaye says, he says, of course I forgive you. I realized a while ago that this was the best thing that happened to me. I'm very happy here in England. I would never have left Tells if that would not have happened. So here again, this was the best thing that ever happened to me. So the two Rabbonim got together and decided how to raise funds for TELS. It would be right after Shabbos. However, Rabbi Motzi Shabbos, after giving a pass and a drosha to Blazer Gordon about the dire financial straits of the yeshiva, he falls ill and he passes away. Well-known tragic episode in the life of Blazer Gordon. Because of political disputes, tensions between the countries, his body could not be returned to Tulsa, and he's buried in England. And it's a major place where people come to the cave of Blazer Gordon. As a matter of fact, there's a tremendous plaque on the oil of Blazer Gordon, which says, who came here with tremendous honor. He was received in England, the great Rosh Yeshiva, the great Rav of Tels, and how tragically he passed away on a Motzei Shabbos. He got ill on a Motzei Shabbos, I'm not sure. And this is what happened. So this story was told, as we said, in the convention center by Dayan Ehrentrau. So a while later, said Rabbi Ehrentrau, to a gathering in Yerushalayim, that someone in Tels, speaking about Rav Blazer Gordon, quoted the posik that says in Mishlei, Mashem Mitzadei Gover, a man's steps are from Hashem. You never know where your steps are going to lead to. Mashem Mitzadei Gover, we say Hamechen Mitzadei Gover every morning. A man's steps, he says, is from Hashem, V'odom Mayovin Darkoi, but a man does not understand his way. No one knows what's going to lead you. And he explained the following. Listen to what Dayan Ehrentrau said. He said, the truth is that Rav Blazer Gordon was destined to go straight to Gan Eden after his death, but there was one impediment in the way. The impediment was that there were two people in the world who felt he had offended them. Hashem wanted to remove the obstacle, so they planted the idea in the mind of the Rav to go raise money in England. He met those two people he offended. The moment he was given Mechila, he passes away. That was it. It's an amazing thing, Rav Blazer. Shem's ways.